This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, brothers and sisters and friends, and welcome to this online live seminar. Can artificial intelligence undermine religion? Now, brothers and sisters, this is a good topic because currently there is a lot of drama, or there is a conversation going on concerning AI, artificial intelligence, robots, computer systems, advanced computer systems, and so on and so forth. And you have academics talking about this. You have people in the popular online sphere talking about this. You see this in the movies. You see this on social media, on videos that you can find on YouTube and many other places. And there has been this kind of conversation going on concerning consciousness, and can robots be fully conscious, or is it just a simulation of consciousness? And there have been subsequent questions or conversations concerning religion, theism, and the idea that there is something special about human beings. We have a soul in the Arabic Islamic tradition, a ruh. We have a spirit, we have consciousness, and the reality of consciousness is specific to human beings. Yes, animals can have consciousness too, but we have rational insights. We have the ability to attach meaning to symbols. We have an ability to attach complex meaning to many symbols. And so the conversation has gone down the path of, well, maybe in the future you can have a robot or a computer program or a piece of hardware, whether it's a robot or not is almost irrelevant, that can have a program that can not only simulate consciousness, but it can be truly conscious, which is this idea of strong AI, strong artificial intelligence, that it really is conscious from the point of view that it has awareness and cognition, just like a human being. Now, that's the strong AI. There is the weak AI, which basically says, well, no, computer programs can never be fully conscious. They only simulate consciousness. They only simulate cognition from the point of view that they can just manipulate symbols in a very advanced and complex way, but there is no way of attaching meaning to the symbols. And that's the summary of today's seminar, basically. But we want to break this down further to empower you, because the whole point of Sapience Institute is that we're here to empower you to be able to share and defend Islam academically and intellectually, and for you to develop others to do so the same. And this means we have to address contemporary questions. And inshallah, God willing, we'll be doing this until Allah gives us our last breath. So let's go through these slides, okay? Can artificial intelligence undermine religion? Well, the first thing we need to talk about is, well, what on earth is AI? According to the late computer scientist John McCarthy, who was based at Stanford University, he said, it is the science and engineering of making intelligent machines, especially intelligent computer programs. It is related to the similar task of using computers to understand human intelligence, but AI does not have to confine itself to methods that are biologically observable. So from this perspective, we're getting the idea that artificial intelligence is a science. It's an engineering that tries to make machines smart, machines intelligent. And it's related to the action or the task of using computer programs or using computers to understand human cognition. Now, according to IBM, and you could find this on their website, and by the way, this has been taken from their website, and you have the links and all the books and references and bibliography at the end of the seminar on the relevant slide. Now, IBM, they basically articulate AI in the following way. At its simplest form, artificial intelligence is a field which combines computer science and robust data sets to enable problem solving. It also encompasses subfields of machine learning and deep learning, which are frequently mentioned in conjunction with artificial intelligence. These disciplines are comprised of AI algorithms, which seek to create expert systems which make predictions or classifications based on input data. So you're getting the idea here that artificial intelligence is a domain of knowledge, if you like. It's a field which takes the understanding of computer science and data. And there is the development of complex algorithms that can basically use that data in a functional way, meaning that they can use it from the point of view that give us solutions, that make predictions, or they classify that data, or they interpret that data. So AI from this perspective, especially when it's related to machine learning and deep learning, is essentially based on data sets and algorithms. So continuing with IBM's understanding of this, and this has been taken literally from the IBM website, and the links are provided at the end of the seminar. Now, yes, there is a kind of connection between artificial intelligence, machine learning, and deep learning. They're all related. So let's unpack some of these concepts so you get to understand them at least on a basic level. So deep learning is actually comprised of neural networks. Now, this sounds quite funny because this is emulating the kind of, or mirroring the kind of human understanding of the brain, or the understanding of the brain, that we have neurons. Now, you have to really understand that neural networks are just basically a kind of term that tries to mimic the way biological neurons signal to one another. So neural networks, in other words, artificial neural networks, are just comprised of node layers containing an input or one or more hidden layers and an output. So basically, it's just a kind of relation between inputs and outputs. There's inputs and outputs in a very complex way, and there are many layers of these inputs and outputs. And that's what it really means, really. So this kind of understanding of neural networks and deep learning is nothing more fundamentally than just basically node layers containing an input layer, one or more hidden layers, and an output layer. And there is a kind of connection between all of these things. There's a kind of relation between these inputs and these outputs. So deep in the deep learning refers to a neural network comprised of more than three layers, which would be inclusive of the inputs and outputs, can be considered a deep learning algorithm. So essentially all it is just layers of inputs and outputs. That's what it is, related in complex ways, connected in complex ways from that perspective. It's just inputs and outputs and many layers of these. So I already explained this. Neural networks, also known as artificial neural networks, or ANNs, or simulated neural networks, SNNs, are a subset of machine learning and are at the heart of deep learning algorithms. The name and structure, as I said, are inspired by the human brain, mimicking the way the biological neurons signal to one another. So essentially, artificial neural networks are comprised of node layers containing an input layer, one or more hidden layers, and an output layer. And all of these essentially are just inputs and outputs, a complex relation between different inputs and outputs and many layers of these. So for it to be deep, it basically means there is one or more, there is more than three of these layers, okay? So hopefully that makes sense. So the understanding of machine learning and deep learning is connected to artificial intelligence, as we've just explained. So now, if you want to break this down fundamentally, brothers and sisters, all it is zeros and ones. That's it, okay? And this has been taken from a very kind of basic website on explaining how computers work, okay? And I've given the link at the end of this seminar on the relevant slide. But I have put this in place because if you break it down to its nuts and bolts, it's just fundamentally zeros and ones. And those zeros and ones are just basically an electronic version of on and off switches. That's it. Simple as that. And computers, they use zeros and ones, which is the binary system, okay? So it's just two digits, one and zero. And this system is called binary. And our computers use it all the time. And you know, just like atoms make up everything around us in the real world, everything in the digital world can be broken down into binary. In other words, zeros and ones. Even though we can't see them, it's all a bunch of ones and zeros. And that is really explained by an electronic version of an on and off switch. So when you use complex computer programs such as C++ or JavaScript or complex computer algorithms, when you talk about machine learning and deep learning, fundamentally, they're stored onto the computer as zeros and ones, which are fundamentally the kind of electronic version of an on and off switch. I hope that makes sense, okay? I'm trying to break this down as simple as possible. So as I alluded to earlier, there is a difference between strong versus weak AI, strong AI and weak AI. And the type of AI that may be a problem to religion is strong AI. So let's understand what these are. Professor John Searle, a philosopher of the mind, he describes strong artificial intelligence as the appropriately programmed computer really is a mind, really is a mind, in the sense that computers, given the right programs, can be literally said to have to understand and have cognitive states. So from his perspective, and there's nothing controversial about this understanding, is that computer programs, they literally have cognitive states. And that means they literally have cognition like a human being. They have awareness and subjective conscious experiences, because when we are undergoing a cognition and we're thinking and we're having rational insights, we also have a subjective feel, a stream of consciousness concerning these rational insights, this cognition, this thinking process. We are aware that we're having it, and there is a what it's like to be in that cognitive state. So we have a sense of subjective experience concerning what it's like to have a rational insight or to think about something deeply. So strong AI really basically is that computer systems or computer program really is a mind. It has a cognitive state. And not only does it have a cognitive state like a human mind, but just like a human mind, it is aware of that state. And there is a subjective element concerning that too. Now, weak AI is kind of different, because weak AI is that computers do not have consciousness in this sense. They do not have cognition in this sense. They only simulate cognition. In other words, they only simulate thought and understanding. They only simulate having a rational insight. They don't really have a rational insight. They don't really have cognition like we do. They only simulate. So our problem or our question today is not about weak AI. It's more about strong AI. So let's raise the question. Strong AI, a problem for religion? Can it be a problem for religion? Well, if you think about it, if artificial intelligence becomes fully conscious from the perspective of strong artificial intelligence, it's going to support the view that consciousness is based on physical functional processes and interactions. And in simple language, it's going to support the kind of philosophical naturalist's perspective that everything can be reduced and understood by physical processes. This means, therefore, that human consciousness could have emerged without anything external to the natural world. In other words, there is no need for a soul, no need for ruh, no need for divine interaction. And this would be problematic from the point of view of religion, as you know. However, one could argue, even if it were the case, even if AI could be fully conscious, it doesn't necessarily mean that religion is undermined, okay? Obviously, there's more to unpack here, but it doesn't necessarily mean that religion is undermined. Why? Because it could be argued that God used these physical functional processes. God used these physical processes that he put in place, that he created in order to bring about consciousness. And therefore, it did not require something non-physical to ensure the emergence of consciousness, right? So once God created the system in place, and the physical process within the system, there was nothing required outside of the system in order for consciousness to emerge. But fundamentally, obviously, the whole system had to be created, and the physical process within that system had to be created by God in the first place. And that's why, obviously, from a more fundamental theistic perspective, you know, one would argue that all phenomena that we observe are contingent, including physical processes, computer programs, the hardware, the software, any type of artificial intelligence. These are contingent in nature. And obviously, if you refer to the argument from contingency, all contingent things derive their existence from a necessary independent being. So he wouldn't deny God's existence per se, and he wouldn't necessarily deny religion, unless, of course, a particular religion actually, you know, highlighted exactly how the ensoulment took place, exactly how consciousness emerged. But that is a different discussion for another time. But generally speaking, you know, even though we can maneuver away from strong eye, even if strong eye were to become a reality, we could still philosophically maneuver, it would provide the philosophical naturalist with, you know, a good argument. They would say, look, you know, it seems that this closed system, this natural system, the universe itself, and physical processes within the universe can give rise to consciousness, cognition, and subjective consciousness, inner subjective conscious experiences. Therefore, there is no need for anything external to this system, because just to remind every single one of you, if you've been following our work, philosophical naturalism is the understanding that there is no divine, there is no supernatural, and everything can be explained by physical processes. In other words, there is no non-physical. And if there was something external to the universe, it doesn't interact with the universe or affect the universe. So they would say, look, you know, philosophical naturalism is supported because strong AI, you know, is a reality, if it were to be a reality, of course. So it could support their worldview, the philosophical lenses that these philosophical naturalists put on their eyes in order to understand themselves and reality. But notwithstanding all of that, there is still some space, philosophically speaking, or intellectually speaking rather, for religion to maneuver and say, well, religion is not necessarily undermined, because even if strong AI were a possibility, it could be argued that God created this system with these physical processes, and the combination of these physical processes in complex interactions, if you like, could give rise to consciousness. That may not be adequate, but that's not the main purpose of our discussion today. Anyway, we could unpack that another time. So how do we address strong AI from this perspective? How do we address it? Now, the previous slide assumes that strong AI, say it's a possibility, how could we respond? But now we're saying, now we're questioning, is strong AI a possibility? And I would argue, of course not. And this is the consensus, from my understanding and reading, of philosophers of the mind, because there are problems for strong AI. The first problem is what you may know as the hard problem of consciousness. And there are two main questions concerning the hard problem of consciousness. And we're focusing on the second main question, which is, can inner subjective conscious experience arise from physical processes fundamentally? It's a fundamental question. So let's unpack the hard problem of consciousness. Now, the hard problem of consciousness, brothers and sisters, is concerned with the nature and source of our conscious experience. And by the way, conscious experience is also known as, or referred to as, phenomenal experience in the language of the philosophy of the mind. And the hard problem of consciousness raises two key questions. Number one, what is it like for a particular organism to have a phenomenal conscious experience? In other words, what is it like for a particular organism to have an inner subjective conscious experience? Okay, this is a very key question. In other words, what is the nature of someone's subjective conscious experience? And this is more of an epistemic question. There is a knowledge gap. I know what it's like for me to have a hot chocolate on a Sunday morning, but I don't know what it's like for someone else to have a hot chocolate on a Sunday morning. And even if I were to map out all the neurochemical firings in their brain and correlate to that experience, it would still not give me that knowledge of what it's like for them to have a hot chocolate on a Sunday morning. Even if I know what it's like, it doesn't necessarily follow I know what it's like for them to have a hot chocolate on a Sunday morning, right? Even if I use words like sweet and creamy, these are just utterances that echo or describe my inner subjective conscious state. They're vehicles to meaning, and meaning is a representation of what's happening inside subjectively. So my understanding of creamy and sweet could be totally different to that person's understanding, even if they use the same descriptions when they're having a hot chocolate on a Sunday morning. So, you know, there is an epistemic gap, a knowledge gap, or what it's like for a particular conscious organism to have an inner subjective conscious experience. Now, the second question, which is really the question that we're focusing on concerning artificial intelligence, strong AI, is why and how do phenomenal experiences, in other words, why and how do Inner subjective conscious experiences arise from physical processes. And you could raise another question, what is the ultimate source of these experiences? Now, why is this important for strong AI, for us to challenge strong AI? Well, it's important because strong AI is supposed to really be conscious. It has human cognition and it has awareness and it has inner subjective conscious states. If it has inner subjective conscious states, then how on earth can we explain that these inner subjective conscious states arise from some hardware and software, which are fundamentally physical processes? Because physical processes are blind and cold. And we're going to unpack that in a few moments. But considering the hard problem, the epistemic question, Professor David Chalmers, who's known to have coined the term hard problem, or at least he was the one who popularized it, he says the really hard problem of consciousness is the problem of experience. When we think and perceive, there is aware of information processing, but there's also a subjective aspect. What unites all these states is that there is something it is like to be in them. All of them are states of experience. If any problem qualifies as the problem of consciousness, it is this one. In this central sense of consciousness, an organism and a mental state is conscious if there is something it is like to be in that state. So he's really kind of summarizing the first question of the hard problem. Now, philosopher Torin Alter, he's summarizing the second question, which, by the way, is not an epistemic one, it's an ontological one. It's the source and nature of our inner subjective conscious experiences. And he says, how does my brain's activity generate those experiences? Why those and not others? Indeed, why is any physical event accompanied by conscious experience? The set of such problems is known as the hard problem of consciousness. Even after all the associated functions and abilities are explained, why one might reasonably wonder why there is something it is like to see letters appear on a computer screen. So the main part of what he's saying is, why is any physical event accompanied by conscious experience? How does my brain's activity generate those experiences? Especially when we understand that physical processes are blind and cold. AI processes are blind and cold. The hardware is blind and cold, whether it's a computer, a chip, a robot. These are fundamentally based on physical processes. Now, from a philosophical naturalistic perspective, they are blind and cold. To say otherwise is to define philosophical naturalism in some other way, is to give it some kind of magical properties, which, from my understanding, no philosophical naturalist worth their salt would even mention such a thing. And we know physical processes, whether it's AI processes, a hardware, software, a program, a robot, a chip, whatever the case may be, the zeros and the ones, the electronic on-off switches, these are blind and cold. Zeros and ones are blind and cold, brothers and sisters, especially when we're talking about strong AI, because fundamentally strong AI can be reduced to zeros and ones. And they're blind and cold. And zeros and ones, by the way, are just the kind of electronic representation of an on and off switch. So these zeros and ones, these physical processes are blind and cold, meaning they do not have an intentional force directing them anywhere. And they are cold. They're not aware of themselves or aware of anything outside of themselves. So given the fact that the physical process, the zeros and the ones in the context of strong AI, and the phenomenal reality, meaning the subjective consciousness, the fact that we have awareness, are completely different, we can easily say, at least from a metaphysical point of view, our metaphysical intuitions tell us that they're not the same, they're totally different. So remember the key question that we want to refer to concerning the hard problem. Why and how do these phenomenal experiences, why and how does this awareness, why and how does this inner subjective conscious experience arise from physical processes? And from the context of strong AI, how does, you know, if it were to be the case, how does strong AI, true consciousness with awareness and cognition arise from blind zeros and ones, cold zeros and ones? There's nothing that intentionally directs them anywhere, and these zeros and ones are not aware of themselves or aware of anything outside of themselves. So to claim the more we know about these physical processes, the more we know about the computer system and the program, and the more we develop, yeah, from a knowledge perspective, you know, to claim that is not going to give you knowledge about how inner subjective conscious experiences arise, because our metaphysical intuitions tell us that inner subjective conscious experience, awareness, cognition from a human point of view is totally different than blind physical processes in the context of strong AI, blind zeros and ones. So, you know, to claim that if we know more about this physical stuff, we're going to know how it arises is false, because it's equivalent of saying knowing more about the wall in front of you will give you rise to knowledge about the moon. And we know that's not the case. We know that knowing more about the wall in front of you will not give rise to knowledge about the moon, because the wall and the moon are fundamentally different. Just like inner subjective conscious experience are fundamentally different to blind physical processes and blind zeros and ones, okay? So one would argue that strong AI, how could it ever be the case that fully conscious artificial intelligence can arise from non-conscious code, blind physical processes, blind zeros and ones? It doesn't make sense. It's like saying, let's believe in magic. That's what it's basically saying. And we know something cannot give rise to something if it does not contain it in the first place or have the potential to give rise to it. Something cannot give rise to something else if it does not contain it in the first place or have the potential to give rise to it. Likewise, blind code zeros and ones do not have inner subjective conscious experience. How can they give rise to it? And blind zeros and ones, even if they causally, they interact in causally complex ways, cannot give rise to inner subjective conscious experience from that perspective. Now, one would argue, well, you've made some broad claims here, but there are physicalist approaches in the philosophy of the mind that tries to explain consciousness. I agree. There's something like eliminative materialism, reductive materialism, functionalism, emergent materialism, strong emergent materialism, weak emergent materialism, and there are many other empirical theories that are based on these fundamental approaches to the philosophy of the mind. We don't have time to explain these, and they are not needed with regards to explaining strong AI and dealing with today's question. They're not needed. However, I will briefly introduce functionalism, which broadly speaking is the approach that underpins the computational approach to the mind, which is important for today's discussion. But if you want more unpacking concerning some of the statements I've just mentioned and unpacking of the kind of different approaches to the philosophy of the mind, the physicalist approaches at least, there is going to be a forthcoming seminar on the hard problem of consciousness, philosophical naturalism, theism, and the physicalist approach to the mind in detail, inshallah, okay? So functionalism, which really underpins the computational approach to the mind. So what is functionalism? Well, a functionalist basically defines consciousness as the functions or roles it plays emerging from a set of relations within an organism or in a system. It doesn't matter. It could be a lump of gray matter or it could be a computer system. And really, these relations are what? It's a relations, or there are relations between inputs, mental states, and outputs. For example, I see my bus arriving, and that's the input. I experience the internal mental state of worrying or being anxious that I'm going to be late, which is the mental state. And then I run towards the bus stop, which is the output. So you see, there is a relation between the input. The bus is arriving, the mental state, oh my God, I'm going to be late. And then I run towards the bus stop, which is the output. Now, what's very important to understand from a functionalist point of view, and this has been well understood if you read the works of Ned Block and others, you see that just because you could understand or figure out the relations between the input, the mental states, and the outputs, it doesn't mean that now you have knowledge of what it's like to be in a particular mental state or what it's like for someone else to be in a particular mental state, which is really the first part of the hard problem of consciousness, or why these inner subjective conscious states or these mental states arise from physical stuff. It's just giving you an understanding of the relations between the input, the mental states, and outputs. It's not giving you an understanding of how these mental states, how this awareness or how this inner subjective conscious reality arises from this kind of physical system. So it doesn't really address it at all. Functionalism doesn't address it at all. So just to give you another example, so I could understand, or I can understand, when someone sees a dangerous dog running towards them, which is the input, they would experience fear, which is the mental state, the inner subjective conscious state. Then they'll run for safety, which is the output. Now, just because I understand the relation between the input, dog running towards them, the fear, which is the mental state, and the output, which is running for safety, just because I understand that relation, it doesn't now make me understand what it's like for someone else to be in that conscious state, as we mentioned with the examples previously. But fundamentally, from the point of view of today's seminar, it doesn't give us any understanding or give us any explanation how these mental states arise from physical processes, how they arise from blind, cold physical processes. Just to remind you, blind meaning there is no intentional force directing this physical process anywhere. And these physical processes are not aware of themselves, aware of anything outside of themselves. And from the point of view of strong AI, fundamentally, these zeros and ones, which are really a representation of an electronic on and off switch, they are not aware of themselves, or aware of anything. They're not aware of anything outside of themselves. And also, brothers and sisters and friends, there's no intentional force directing these zeros and ones anywhere, or from that perspective, right? So that was the first main problem. It's the first main problem. It's the fundamental problem. The second part, the second question of the hard problem of consciousness, how does awareness, how does this mental state, how does this inner subjective conscious experience, how does this phenomenal state arise from physical processes when these physical processes are blind and cold? They're not intentional force directing them anywhere and not aware of themselves and aware of anything outside of themselves. It just doesn't make any sense. Because remember, something cannot give rise to another thing if it does not contain it or have the potential to give rise to it. And these things, these physical processes, whether it's a computer system, whether it's reduced to the electronic version of on and off switch, the zeros and ones, these things are not, they don't have any intentional force directing them anywhere. And they're not aware of themselves or aware of anything outside of themselves. So how can you combine these things to produce something that has awareness? To make such a claim is like, I believe in magic, right? So that's the first main problem. The second main problem, which is the key problem, is what you call the syntax semantic problem. It could be formulated in the following question. Can artificial intelligence attach meaning to symbols? The first thing to understand is this. Artificial intelligence is really an extension of us. It's an extension of our own awareness. It's an extension of our own consciousness. It's an extension of our own cognition. Remember, artificial intelligence from this perspective is not an independent system with the ability to engage in real cognition. AI, artificial intelligence, was designed, developed, and made by human beings that can attach meaning to symbols. Human beings can attach meaning to symbols. We can do that. AI is just a protraction of our ability to engage in cognition, in real cognition. In this case, our ability to attach meaning to symbols. We can do that. Computer systems can't do that. They just simulate our real cognition. And William Hasker really just eloquently summarizes this point. He says, computers function as they do because they have been constructed by human being endowed with rational insight. A computer, in other words, is merely an extension of the rationality of its designers and users. It is no more independent source of rational thought than a television set is an independent source of news and entertainment. All computers do is mirror our ability. They don't have the ability. All computers do is mirror our ability to attach meaning to symbols. They don't have the ability to attach meaning to symbols. It's just for them, it's just an arrangement of symbols. It is syntax. It is not semantics. Okay? Let me break this down further for you. When we talk about syntax and semantics, we're talking about this concept in the philosophy of the mind called intentionality. Okay? So when we say AI cannot have any real cognition, they only simulate our cognition, what we're saying is they don't have intentionality, because human beings are only really intelligent from that perspective. We have intentionality. So what's intentionality? Intentionality is that our reasoning, our cognition is about or of something, and that is associated with meaning. Okay? And conversely, computer programs are not characterized as having meanings. All they do is manipulate symbols. Remember the zeros and ones? They manipulate zeros and ones. That's all they do, really, fundamentally. The electronic on and off switch. That's all they do. It's just a sequence or many, many, many thousands and millions, if you like, of on and off switches, electronic on and off switches. That's all it is. It could be an on, off, 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 on, off, on, off, whatever the case may be. It's just a complex arrangement of those. That's what it is. And those things do not have meaning. They're just syntax. It's just arrangement of symbols, okay? And they cannot attach meaning to those symbols. Now, for the computer system, for the AI system, if you like, the symbols are not about or of something. All computers can see, inverted commas, are the symbols they're manipulating, irrespective of what we may think the symbols are about or of. So computer systems, or the way the computer systems manipulate these symbols, do not have the feature of intentionality. They're not about something or of something, right? In other words, you could even extend it to say they're not aware of themselves or aware of anything outside of themselves. But from the point of view of intentionality, it's just on and off switches. It's not about something or of something. But human beings, when we have cognition, it is about or of something. And that relates to meaning. So let's break this down a little bit further to really get you to understand the difference between meaning and symbols. In other words, syntax and semantics. Syntax is like symbols, and semantics is meaning. So take these two sentences, okay? The following sentences. I love my family, which is English. And agabo din igogeniam, I love my family, which is in Greek. Now, these two sentences, they have the same syntax. They have the same meaning. In other words, I love my family. And this refers to semantics, the meaning of the sentences. But the syntax is different. In other words, the symbols are not the same. They're unlike. Now, if you never knew anything about the Greek language, and I told you to put the alpha there, the gamma there, the alpha next to the gamma, and so on and so forth, and give you the right spacing, and give you the right symbols, and make you arrange it in the correct way, it wouldn't give rise to meaning. It wouldn't give rise to meaning. You could do this with any language. For example, you could say, I love you. And then you could say in Turkish, seni seviyorum, I love you, which means I love you. And you could say in Greek, se agabo. All of these three sentences have the same semantics, the same meaning, I love you, but they have different syntax. Now, if you only knew the Turkish language and you knew how to spell seni seviyorum, when you spelt it, you could attach the meaning to those symbols because you know the meaning of the language. But if you didn't know English and you didn't know Greek, even if I gave you all of the right combinations of the symbols, in other words, the letters, it would not give rise to the meaning of I love you for you. And this is very, very important to understand. And therefore, from this perspective, the following argument can be developed. Computer programs are syntactical, based on syntax, in other words, based on the manipulation of symbols. Minds have semantics, minds have meaning. Syntax by itself is neither sufficient nor constitutive for semantics. So symbols, arrangement of symbols by themselves are neither sufficient nor constitutive for meaning. Therefore, computer programs by themselves are not minds. Therefore, they don't have full consciousness. You can't have strong AI. And if you can't have strong AI, then religion is not undermined. Now, this leads us to talking about the Chinese room experiment, brothers and sisters, which is a phenomenal, phenomenal thought experiment. And Professor John Searle, and I'm going to use my book, The Divine Reality, the newly revised edition, to read from John Searle's Chinese room thought experiment, and it's quoted in the book, and the references you have at the end of this seminar on the appropriate slide. So let me read it for you. What is the Chinese room thought experiment? Now listen to it very carefully, and I'll explain it further as well, but just listen to it. Imagine you are locked in a room, and in this room are several baskets full of Chinese symbols. Imagine that you, like me, do not understand a word of Chinese, but that you are given a rule book in English for manipulating the Chinese symbols. The rules specify the manipulation of symbols purely formally in terms of their syntax, not the semantics. So the rule might say, take a squiggle squiggle out of basket number one and put it next to a squiggle squiggle sign from basket number two. Now, suppose that some other Chinese symbols are passed into the room and that you're given further rules for passing back Chinese symbols out of the room. Suppose that unknown to you, the symbols passed into the room are called questions by the people outside of the room, and the symbols you pass back out of the room are called answers to questions. Suppose, furthermore, that the programmers are so good at designing the programs that you are so good at manipulating the symbols that very soon your answers are indistinguishable from those of a native Chinese speaker. There you are locked in your room, shuffling your Chinese symbols and passing out Chinese symbols in response to incoming Chinese symbols. Now, the point of the story simply is this. By virtue of implementing a formal computer program from the point of view of an outside observer, you behave exactly as if you understood Chinese, but all the same, you do not understand a word of Chinese. So, brothers and sisters, from this perspective, this is similar to what's happening with the computer program on artificial intelligence system. You have zeros and ones. And just because the zeros and ones, they are combined in a particular way to produce what seems to be thinking, seems to be cognition, it doesn't mean it's real cognition like a human being with awareness and with a particular conscious mental state, with an inner subjective conscious mental state. It just simulates it, just like the person in this room simulates understanding Chinese, but they have no understanding of Chinese. They just have a rule book, just like a computer program, that is able to take these symbols and manipulate and combine them in a particular way and to produce other symbols. Even if it's deep learning or machine learning, all of that really is just inputs and outputs, manipulation of complex symbols, which are fundamentally reduced to zeros and ones, which fundamentally are electronic versions of, or electronic manifestations or representations of on-off switches. So that's what it is. It's a complex program that puts symbols together that simulates cognition, simulates rational insight, simulates cognition with apparently some kind of awareness, right? All it is a manipulation of syntax. There is no way the system can attach meaning to the symbol. And this thought experiment is brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant because you have a complex computer program. It's in the English language. Someone is passing Chinese symbols into the room. You don't know the meaning of the Chinese symbols, but you have the program in place, which is in the English language. And it says, if you see this squiggle, squiggle, put this squiggle, squiggle together, and you do that, and you produce the right answers. Now, people outside the room think that you know the meaning, you know Chinese, you understand Chinese, you understand the meaning behind these symbols, but you don't. You just are able to combine these Chinese symbols or characters in the right way. That's all you can do, and that's what a computer program does. Now, brothers and sisters, there is something called the system's reply, because there is an objection, and Professor John Searle, he understood this objection quite well. And the objector might respond to this by arguing that although the computer program doesn't know the meaning, the whole system does. Now, Searle calls this the system's reply, and he answers this very well. Basically, think about it. Why is it that the program does not know the meaning? The reason the program does not know the meaning is because it has no way of assigning meaning to the symbols. Correct. But since a computer program cannot assign meaning to the symbols, how can a computer system which relies on the program understand the meaning? You cannot produce understanding just by having the right program. That's the point. And even so, he extended this version of the Chinese room thought experiment to show that the system as a whole does not understand the meaning. And he says, imagine that I memorize the contents of the baskets and the rule books. So imagine the contents of the basket, the Chinese characters, you memorize them and you memorize the rule book and you do all of the calculations in your head, right? You can even imagine that I work out in the open. I might even write it out and work it out in the open. There is nothing in the system in my head from this perspective that is not in me. And since I don't understand Chinese, neither does the system. So what he's basically saying is, imagine you had the baskets full of Chinese characters in your head and the rule book in English to know how to manipulate those Chinese characters to produce the right answers. Even if all of that was in your head and you were to work it out on a blackboard, for example, or a whiteboard, even if you were able to do that, you still won't understand the meaning of those Chinese symbols. You just were able to manipulate them in the right way. So the whole system now comes into your head. And even though the whole system is in your head, you still don't have any way of attaching meaning to symbols. You just can only manipulate the symbols, in this case, manipulate the Chinese characters to produce the right answers for the observer who actually already knows the meaning. But as with the philosophy of the mind, there's further contentions, right? Now, Loris Coulton postulates that Searle's Chinese Room thought experiment commits the fallacy referred to as the denial of the antecedent. So Coulton maintains that Searle commits the fallacy because we are given no evidence that there is only one way to produce intentionality. And he claims that Searle is assuming that only brains have the processes to manipulate and understand symbols, in other words, intentionality, and computers do not. And so Coulton presents the fallacy in the following way. To say certain brain process equivalents produce intentionality and X does not have these equivalents, therefore X does not have intentionality, is to commit the formal fallacy, denial of the antecedent, which is a logical fallacy. However, Dale Jacquet maintains that Searle does not commit the formal fallacy if an interpretation of Searle's argument is, if X is intrinsically intentional, then X has certain brain process equivalents. And I don't even really find this objection as satisfying in any shape or form. It's a pointless objection. But nevertheless, what Dale continues to argue on behalf of Searle is, well, you know, therefore Searle must believe in functionalism, or it's a concession to functionalism. And he argues that functionalists maintain that there is nothing special about protoplasm, the brain, so that any properly organized matter instantiating the right input-output program duplicates the intentionality of the mind. So from this perspective, Searle seems to admit that machines could potentially have the ability to understand Chinese if these machines were arranged in the correct input-output program that duplicates intentionality of the mind, right? However, Searle states, I do see very strong arguments for saying that we could not give such a thing, in other words, intentionality, to a machine where the operation of the machine is defined solely in terms of computational processes over formally defined elements. In other words, arrangements of symbols, right? The syntax. So he was saying, hypothetically, from a functionist point of view, if hypothetically we're able to get the right input-output program, whether it's in protoplasm or a computer system or anything else, it's irrelevant for the functionalist, as long as it's a properly organized matter that has the right input-output program, and it duplicates intentionality, that this input-output program that can somehow be about or of something, yeah, if it can duplicate intentionality of the mind, then maybe we can have a system that is not a human that can have, that could be fully conscious. But does such a system exist? No. And also, the way we understand computers today, especially with the binary system zeros and ones, and the rearrangement of symbols, in other words, syntax, how can you ever have intentionality? Because all computer programs are, or computer systems are, or computer machine is just defined solely in terms of computational process over formally defined elements. In other words, just an arrangement of symbols, a complex arrangement of symbols. And having symbols alone do not give rise to meaning, give rise to semantics. And that's why, you know, even if the functionists may have a point, well, the question here is, well, are conscious machines possible? Can we have such a machine in place? Well, in order to have such a machine in place, the robot or the machine would have to be able to attach meaning to symbols. But that would require something other than computational processes over formally defined elements, meaning it would have to have something other than the ability just to manipulate symbols. It would have to have the ability to attach meaning to the symbols. Does such a machine exist? No. Could they exist? If they could, they would probably have to be able to attach meaning to the symbols. And could they do that? And if they could do that, well, they could do it. But it just doesn't exist. And the computer programs today, computer programs tomorrow, how deep learning is being developed, and machine learning and AI is fundamentally just the complex arrangements of syntax, in other words, symbols, fundamentally zeros and ones, fundamentally the electronic version of on and off switches combined in complex ways, even with many, many layers of these. They are fundamentally just symbols arranged in a particular way, syntactical arrangements. The system itself or the program itself has no way of attaching meaning to those symbols. It's just a simulation of human consciousness. It's not like human consciousness at all, because humans can attach meaning to the symbols. The program, just like what William Haske said, is just a kind of mirroring of that. It's a simulation of that. So even if one were to argue, well, maybe you can have, from a functionist point of view, a system in place that has the right input-output type of program that, you know, has intentionality. Well, where is it? Because we're talking about strong AI in the form of robots, in the form of computers, in the form of the hardware that we know today. And the programs that we have today are just based on syntax, not semantics, symbolic arrangements, the arrangements of symbols. So you're talking about this hypothetical that just doesn't exist. That's the point here. And even if you were to adopt a functionist understanding, and that's why we addressed it earlier in the seminar, if you address a functionist understanding, remember, functionism is just the relation between input mental states and outputs. Even if you know the relations, it doesn't explain why these mental states arise from seemingly cold, blind physical processes. So from this perspective, religion is not undermined, brothers and sisters. According to Rocco Gennaro, many philosophers agree with Searle's view that robots could not have phenomenal consciousness. In other words, they cannot have inner subjective conscious experience. They cannot have the ability to attach meaning to symbols. They are not aware of that process either. And that's why some philosophers argue that to build a conscious robot, qualitative experience must be present. And that's something that they're really pessimistic about. And to quote, to explain consciousness is to explain how the subjective internal appearance of information can arise in the brain. And so to create a conscious robot would be to create subjective internal appearance of information inside the robot. No matter how advanced, would likely not make the robot conscious, since the phenomenal internal appearances must be present as well. Why? Because AI cannot attach meaning to symbols. It just manipulates them in very complex ways. The human mind, therefore consciousness, is only simulated, not actualized. Therefore, there will never be a strong version of AI. Therefore, religion is not undermined. You can have the Islamic view that consciousness, or if you want to connect it to the concepts of the ruh, of the soul, was given to us from a supernatural perspective, and it's not based on blind, cold physical processes. So brothers and sisters, this is your bibliography, the websites that I referred to, very basic websites for you to understand machine learning, neural networks, for you to understand basic computer science, like the binary system, zeros and ones. And here are the references with that I mentioned, Lawrence Calton, Rocco Gennaro, William Haske, Dale Jacquet, and the references of John Searle, various works. So brothers and sisters, I hope you enjoyed that. Let's now have some questions. I realize I may have been bent most of the time. I do apologize. I was going that way. I should have been going that way, but khair, inshallah. The important thing was that you listened to me and you went through this presentation. So, bismillah, let's have some questions. Let's have some questions, brothers and sisters. Okay, let's see if you guys want to ask some questions. Bear with me. Let's scroll from the beginning. Okay. So people are giving their salams. Wa alaykum as-salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Okay, so I'm just looking through these questions to find a question. A lot of these things are comments, which some of them are just reflecting what I've said. Abdurrahman says, Assalamu alaikum. AI is simply a tool which has been mythologized by modernists. Machines can never think. Yeah, they can't think like humans, that's for sure. They can only simulate thinking. I can't really. I can't really see any questions. There are some discussions that are not relevant or related to the topic, as per usual. this is a very good question. Hoba Elala, I don't get it. Isn't the electrical signals considered zeros and ones the same signals that are produced by the brain? Well, even if that were to be the case, so you have neurons firing, for example, here's a problem. You are making inner subjective conscious experience identical to those electrochemical firings. And that is a problem because you'd be assuming a physicalist ontology, or you'd be assuming a physicalist understanding of the mind. For example, you may be assuming eliminative materialism or reductive materialism, that you could reduce consciousness, in this case, in a subjective conscious experience, to these neurochemical firings. But that would be assuming that. You won't be proving that. Because remember, the two main questions of the hard problem of consciousness. The first one is, what is it like for a particular conscious organism to have a specific conscious experience? I know what it's like to have a hot chocolate on a Sunday, but I don't know what it's like for you to have a hot chocolate on a Sunday. Even if we describe it as the same, I don't know what it's like for you. The second question is, well, how does inner subjective conscious experience arise from seemingly blind, cold physical processes? These two questions cannot be answered with the assumption of your question, which is, in this case, we could say it's reductive materialism or reductive physicalism, that you can reduce inner subjective conscious experience to neurochemicals firing. But that's the question itself. Can we? You're assuming it to be true without any evidence. Yes, neuroscience is the science of correlation. There may be a correlation when you have neurochemicals firing with the inner subjective conscious experience, but it doesn't mean it is the same as the inner subjective conscious experience. And that's why you have these two main questions of the hard problem that you can't answer with reductive materialism or reductive physicalism. And, or even other aspects of physicalism. And obviously this today's seminar wasn't about that. And we are going to have a seminar specifically unpacking eliminative materialism, reductive materialism, functionalism, emergent materialism, and so on and so forth in light of the hard problem. So we will address that. But hopefully the way I've addressed this question is enough, because you're assuming that actually the electrical signals in the brain or the neurochemicals firing, just like the zeros and ones in the computer, is identical to inner subjective conscious experience. But that's not the case. Or they give rise to inner subjective conscious experience in some way. But you have to prove that. You can't just assume it just because you're raising the question. And when we focus on those two questions of the hard problem, we realize, well, hold on a second, physicalism, especially in the conception of eliminative materialism and reductive materialism. Oh, by the way, physicalism and materialism and these two terms in the philosophy of the mind are used synonymously. They have different histories and slight different meanings, but they're used synonymously, okay? Anyway, so, you know, the physicalist understanding of eliminative materialism and reductive materialism or reductive physicalism, you know, can't answer the two problems of the hard problem of consciousness. Unless you want to assume them to be true, but then you're just you're not proving your assumption, you're just assuming your assumption, right? I hope that, does that make sense? If you want more further unpacking, let me know. So Hamza, are you saying that this is a wholly frivolous pursuit, not worth investigating? No, I'm not saying that. I'm not really, I'm neutral concerning that question. I'm just saying it's not a problem for religion or for kind of a theistic worldview, or specifically a religious worldview with this understanding of consciousness and the soul. Good question, Rami, or good point. I think the real question is learning the same as consciousness, because we can create systems that learn? Well, do we? We create systems that that you have an algorithm that is works upon an existing data set, even if that current data set is not categorized. Yes, it can derive, it could categorize that data set and provide solutions. If you want to call that learning, then so be it. But is it learning the way we learn with real cognition, and that has an element of awareness and inner subjective conscious state or conscious quality to it? No. And that's why you're right, because we can create systems that can learn from that perspective, but, and people call that AI, but it's a false equivalency. I agreed. It's not the same as I just mentioned. Let me just find a few more questions, brothers and sisters. Bear with me. Some of your comments are really funny, man. Honestly, it's like, you know, what do you guys eat? Or sometimes I want to say, what do you guys smoke? Yeah, I'm only kidding. Just bear with me. Bear with me. Let's just increase the size of this. Okay, Rehan Khan says, should Muslims be against AI? No, AI is just a tool, and you use that tool for good or for bad. And it's simple as that. I mean, I would argue, I haven't done much research on this, but social media is a kind of interesting tool, because people think that they're free, but the kind of algorithms actually, they almost have the effect of social influence. Yeah, and that has been shown. So, you know, I mean, cognitive scientists say, you know, if you want a healthy, you know, psychology or sense of self, don't scroll or don't use Instagram. Professor John Vivaki from the University of Toronto, I consider him a friend. I've engaged with him a few times, twice. I did a podcast with him. And he's a great human being. And he mentioned in one of our interactions in Canada at the University of Toronto, he basically says, get off Instagram. It's literally not good for you. Right? So, yeah, you know, algorithms can be used for good or bad. Consider an algorithm like a knife. You can cut a mango and share it with your brothers and sisters in humanity, or you can kill someone, right? So you can use it for good or for bad. Okay, let's take one more question. Just bear with me. It's very interesting. So, this is the final question. Now, Hamoudi says, why can't consciousness just be seen as something that emerges from an absurd number of computations that we can't track? This is usually what atheists say. Well, not all atheists say this. And this really is assuming the physicalist approach to the mind known as emergent materialism. Okay. Now, there is a problem with emergent materialism. There are two forms of emergent materialism. The first form is the weak form and the strong form. And by the way, I'm just going to summarize this, but we're going to have a seminar in detail concerning emergent materialism. The weak form, brothers and sisters, of emergent materialism basically says that there are complex processes that are causally connected in complex ways. And when we understand how they are causally connected in complex ways, then we will be able to understand how consciousness emerges. Because what does emergence mean? It basically says that there is a property that emerges that you cannot find in the individual processes, but because there are many of these processes that are causally connected in complex ways, you'll have a property emerging that cannot be found in the individual parts of the system or the individual parts of the physical processes or the individual physical process. It only emerges, this unique property emerges as a result of this these many physical processes causally connected in complex ways. Okay, so, and they say once we understand how that happens, then we'll basically, you know, have a true understanding. But that really just assumes reductive materialism or reductive physicalism to be true, which basically is another way of saying, well, yes, consciousness can be, is identical or reduced to in some way, or explained by in some way by physical processes. But reductive materialism can't answer the hard problem of consciousness, right? Any of the questions. Because remember the two questions of the hard problem of consciousness. Number one, what is it like for a particular conscious organism to have an inner subjective conscious state? And number two, why and how do these do these inner subjective conscious states arise from seemingly cold, blind physical processes? Reductive materialism or this type of physicalism can't answer those questions, because the first question is, oh, well, you know, it's a physical process in the brain, it's neurochemicals firing. Okay. But if I were to map out the person in question, his or hers neurochemicals or the neurochemicals firing in their brain, the electrochemical signals in their brain, map those out and correlate to the inner subjective conscious experience, it won't give me, don't give rise for me to know what their conscious experience is. That's the first point. Even if that mapping was the same as my mapping and I had the similar experience, I all we're doing is using my descriptions of the experience and correlating it with their descriptions, even if we use the same descriptions, and assuming that we're having exactly the same inner subjective conscious experience, which would be false. So the point is, it can't answer the first question, because when you map out all the electrochemical processes and all the electrochemical firings or happenings that are happening in one's brain, it doesn't now follow that you know exactly what it's like for them to be in a particular conscious state. Even if that map, that neurochemical or the electrochemical map is similar to mine, having the same type of experience, say eating a banana, right? And I'm using certain descriptions, it doesn't mean now they're having, and they use the same descriptions too, it doesn't mean they're having the same experience. So the first question is not answered of the hard problem, nor is the second question answered, which is what, the ontological question. How do neurochemicals firing, or how do inner subjective conscious experiences arise from physical processes that are seemingly blind and cold? They have no intentional force directing them anywhere, and they're not aware of themselves or aware of anything outside of themselves. How does that happen? Because remember, you cannot give rise to something if something cannot give rise to another thing if that thing, or if where it came from doesn't, it's not contained within it or has the potential to give rise to it. Having something non-conscious and cold and blind, plus something non-conscious, cold and blind, causally connected in complex ways, is still going to give you something that's non-conscious, cold and blind, unless you want to believe in magic, right? So it doesn't answer those two questions. So the weak form of emergent materialism actually just assumes reductive materialism or a form of physicalism, and it doesn't answer the two problems of the hard problem of consciousness, the two questions of the hard problem of consciousness, the epistemic one and the ontological one. Now, the strong form is quite interesting. And actually, let me read the strong form for you, because the strong form is doesn't give an answer at all. It doesn't even answer the questions of the hard problem of consciousness. And the strong form basically says that it's too complicated. We're never going to know. We're just never going to know. So let me just read it from my book. So the strong form of emergent materialism argues that subjective consciousness is a natural phenomenon. However, any physicalist theory that attempts to address its reality is beyond the capacity of the human intellect. This form of emergence argues that we can get a new phenomenon X from Y without knowing how X emerges from Y. Strong emergent materialism maintains that we can get something new from the complex physical processes, but the gap in understanding of how this thing emerges will never be closed. Now, this approach doesn't explain the hard problem of consciousness. It doesn't answer the two questions. And, you know, in my view, it's no different to saying it just happens. It's so complex that no one knows, which really is similar to what they accuse theists of doing. God did it. We don't know how, but God did it, right? And Ravoncio argues, Anthony Ravoncio, the philosopher of the mind, he argues that strong emergent materialists will never be able to address subjective consciousness. And even if we were to be given the correct theory, and I quote, it would be equal what hamsters could make of Charles Darwin's Origins of Species if a copy was placed in their cage. And then I continue to say, since we're trying to explain the hard problem of consciousness or answer the two questions, dismissing subjective consciousness as a mystery does nothing to prevent a rational person from accepting an approach that actually does coherently explain it. And I would argue that theism coherently explains it, but that's for another seminar, brothers and sisters and friends. And to that point, brothers and sisters, I pray you're all well, and may Allah bless every single one of you and grant you all the best in this life and the life to come. I've just seen a question here by Rehan Khan. Does Islam have a dualist perspective? We're going to address that in another seminar, brothers and sisters. Jazakallah here for giving me the opportunity to share this information with you. If you found it useful, please share it with other people. Anything good has come from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, al-bar, the source of all goodness. Anything good, inaccurate, or wrong has come from my nafs, my ego, shaytan. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.